You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 147, Fantasia 2000. You're such a snob. This episode was brought to you by the patrons. That's right. To find out more about how you can get your favorite movie nominated, head on over to rotoscopers.com/Patreon. Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. I'm your host, Morgan Stradling, here with my lovely co-host, as usual, Miss Chelsea Robson.
I am here, as usual.
Nothing's changed. So for those of you who are new to our show, the Animation Addicts Podcast is a show all about the wide, wonderful world of animation. We review a film, past or present.
It's a beautiful world.
It is a beautiful world. Very colorful, sometimes not so colorful, mostly colorful.
Mostly colorful.
Lots of movement.
Yes.
Good. So,
and lots of music, as in today's.
Ooh, what a good lead in you. So this episode, we are going to be reviewing Fantasia 2000, which is a follow-up to the first film, Fantasia, which we did last episode. So funny how those it works out that way.
Ha ha ha.
So this episode, we are reviewing Fantasia 2000, which is a patron pick by our patron, Maz. So thank you very much for picking this. So let's jump right into this, shall we?
First off, we're going to go on into, we have a special treat for everybody. We have a nerdy couch discussion.
Ooh.
We haven't had these in a really long time, but it's one that definitely needs to happen. And it's actually with one of our patrons. You can go to rotoscopers.com/Patreon to be able to find out how you also could eventually become a guest in our Nerdy Couch discussion.
Yes. Hello. Become a patron. We love patrons. And we love patrons who are the $20 level. Because they get to join us. So we get to talk to them. So
exactly.
Let's jump right into it.
So on the line, we have Satria, and
hey.
Satria is in St. Louis, having a good old time out there.
Currently in St. Louis. Wow, this is amazing.
Well, we're glad to have you.
Thank you. I've been listening to you guys since 2015. It was the time that I was about to finish my bachelor's at architecture in the University of Indonesia.
Okay.
And so, I was just browsing through some podcasts, and I figured there's not that many podcasts out there that's catering to animation fans like myself until I saw you guys in iTunes, I believe. And then, the rest is history. You guys made a lot of episodes up until then.
It's true.
So, Satria is actually one of our patrons. So, we've talked about our patron program before, but one of the perks of being this level of patron is that you get to join us for a nerdy couch discussion of your choice. So here we are. And actually, it was Satria's pick to do Fantasia last episode. Am I correct?
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
And so,
thank you for my Patreon pick, but also I'm honored to be part of an extension of last week's episode to be part of this one, the sequel to Fantasia.
Well, I'm excited, too, because that's a movie that, as you know from last episode, I love a lot. Chelsea has different feelings, but that's okay. So it's one that I'm excited that we got to actually talk about. So before we kind of go into our nerdy couch discussion, do you have any, one or two points about the movie that maybe we didn't cover that you want to talk about or mention?
Right. You asked about how the shadows in Takata and Fugue were made in the live action portion of the segment. I mean, I think they're called superimposed shadows. So I figured they did a lot of layers of projection from the real performers, but then it is then done in several layers afterwards. I'm referencing something that's actually in music videos, for instance, Lana Del Rey's Young and Beautiful. That music video for especially the orchestra portion felt similar to what is being done with the Takata and Fugue section of it. So, and I figured that something like that is because the music video is very much inspired by the wonders that Fantasia has to offer to entertainment and media.
Oh, it's awesome. Well,
yeah.
Now we know. What would you rate Fantasia if you were to rate it?
I would give Fantasia a definite 5 stars. Just because I have a long history with the film ever since I was as little. As I grew older, I become more accustomed to listen to classical music as if it's like a pastime and also something that is sort of ingrained in my mind while listening to them. But the film itself, Fantasia, I learned as the years go by, like, it's a masterpiece. It's a classic that stood the test of time. As a whole, it's a creative force.
Awesome. Well, I agree with you. I think a lot of people, it was interesting to see a lot of people really do consider Fantasia to be a masterpiece.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Well, we had so many voicemails for it last time.
Yeah.
And everyone who sent in, it's pretty amazing when you look at people who, if they like Fantasia, they love Fantasia. There's really no middle ground, I don't think.
Right.
So one thing we wanted to talk about in this Nerdy Couch discussion was kind of classical music and kind of focused on Fantasia. So I guess the first question that we're going to talk about is existing shorts that got or are getting the Fantasia treatment, meaning that there's no dialogue and it's just a story set to classical music or perhaps abstract pieces of movement to classical pieces. So do you have any favorite Fantasia-esque pieces that you would like to talk about?
I have a question. Do you know The Little Match Girl?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one. I like that one quite a lot because of how the story and the music and the nuance of that little piece actually felt they were meant to be together in a way. And that piece in particular give this sort of somber but sort of hopeful kind of tone with the music.
Yeah, Little Match Girl's one of my favorites, and it's one of the ones that you can find on the Walt Disney Shorts collection.
Right.
And another short that I'm thinking of, actually, that I really like is Paper Man. Because Paper Man, it's very, basically no dialogue. And it's not necessarily, I guess when I think of Paper Man, I don't necessarily think of the music really leading it. But
the animation style.
The animation is... It really does drive and tell the story. However, it is another example of where it's, a silent animated piece. And shorts do lend themselves to this medium as a whole. Like, I can't ever imagine Disney going and just doing a whole feature with no words.
Yeah, exactly.
And one of the best overall, which Chelsea had mentioned, is Peter and the Wolf.
Yeah, so Peter and the Wolf, to me, is one of those fantastic, iconic films. All of the notes and all of the sounds definitely followed what was happening in the story itself, as you know, just kind of like in the Silly Symphonies, how they did those. They're just so much fun. You know, it's interesting though. I was thinking also.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
What the difference between so like Peter and the Wolf, it's an actual like play or an actual.
That's the whole purpose of it.
Yeah. There's a narrator, for sure.
There's music with a narrator. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so and that's kind of like what Fantasia is, too, is all of these songs were pre-written and then they put all this animation behind it, you know, versus Paper Man, it wasn't that way. Paper Man was a film that they ended up having, you know, music written to push along the film.
Right.
So what is, I feel like they do the latter a whole lot more for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Yeah. It's very hard. I think even in Fantasia 2000, there's only one song, which is the Piano Concerto Number 2, Allegro, Opus 102, which was the story of the Tin Soldier, which was a pre-existing story, and this whole time they were looking for
a song
to right. match it. And so mm-hmm. I think that's very rare where you have a story and you're like, I'm just waiting for the perfect yeah. piece. Well, right. hello, there's thousands also, of composers yeah. around here. Let's just hire one. Right. And, like, make the perfect piece.
Make it work.
And so I think that's what makes Fantasia really amazing is that it does take pre-existing works and puts this spin on them with a very visual sense that maybe it's one person's visual interpretation of that song.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And even to the point where for that segment that you just mentioned, Morgan, that they even had to change some of the story aspects. For instance, like the original fairy tale, like most of Hans Christian Andersen's stories ended in a very down note that the protagonists normally die. But because the music had an uplifting beat at the end, that they had to change it from having the soldier and the ballerina file into the fireplace in favor for the Jack in the Box to really get the beating, mm-hmm. and ended up with this typical Disney style ending to it, which yeah. I think again fits with the music. The music has to be driving the whole action along towards the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that kind of leads me to my next question, in a way, is what pieces of classical music would you like to see animated? Because there's some really great works out there, some very well-known ones and not so well-known ones. Which do you have any that you would, either of you, would like to see potentially in the future one day made?
I would love to see Handel's Messiah put something together.
Oh, mm. that would be really epic.
Yeah, I mean, you don't even need... You don't necessarily have to even do it as a religious piece, even though that's what it is.
Yeah.
But it's like just the sound, just the scale of that music is just so amazing. And it also, right. it's catchy too. Like everybody knows Handel's Messiah.
Everyone referenced that choir right. section.
Exactly.
I guess I really, really liked Holst's The Planet. I thought Gustav Holst, I think that's his name. I learned that Holst's The Planets actually became the main inspiration for a lot of sci-fi movie soundtracks, like Star Wars, for instance. There are like six movements, if I'm not mistaken. And I feel like each movement tells a different story. So maybe they could use one of those movements to tell us the definite story rather than having to use that whole, like the entire piece that could ended up making like a 1 hour short.
Yeah, right.
But this harkens a little back to like something in the original Fantasia that a lot of the segments are like 10 minutes to 22 minutes long, which mm-hmm. I don't know how you guys feel. Like maybe you couldn't sit still watching the segments go because they're like super long rather than like the ones in Fantasia 2000s that were like short, but yet they're concise as well.
Yeah.
One thing that I would love to see is Aaron Copland's Rodeo. So Aaron Copland is a more contemporary composer, you know, of the 20s, I guess. And that is just a very classic. That's I think it's been in commercials like, you know, for beef and steaks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that one.
It's like cowboy.
Yes, it's totally cowboy. It definitely is, you know, and it even has the name Rodeo, but it'd be very cool to see. I mean, I hope they would do some sort of Southwestern inspired motif or story to that. But I could just imagine some sort of like, you know, whether it's a rancher or a cowboy and then some sort of strife that happens. And it's right. not the longest piece, but I think that'd be one of my top picks. So,
yeah.
All right. So we're going to close this Nerdy Couch discussion off talking about animation concerts. So one thing that recently has been popularized over the past few years is, you know, we all love to hear the movie soundtracks that mm-hmm. we've grown and loved. And so there's different concert series that are around and that have toured. Namely, one of them is Pixar in Concert.
I did see that one.
To go mm-hmm. and hear your favorite music mm-hmm. of Pixar performed on stage. And what I love about this is because, you know, I think the symphony, you know, going mm-hmm. to the symphony is sort of a dying art in a way where most people just want to go to the movies. People don't want to go to the opera or the symphony so much. And so one thing that symphonies and different groups have done to boost their sales and attendance is that, okay, let's do some pop culture segments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here in at the Phoenix Symphony next week, actually, there's one just all the music of John Williams.
Which, oh my goodness.
They do a Harry Potter one around Halloween. Uh-huh. And
so, also have in St. Louis too.
Yeah. So, yeah. So Pixar in Concert, Chelsea, you went to that. How was that?
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude. Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Oh, it was amazing. Definitely the first half was more iconic than the second half, because how they do it is they do like every movie in order. Mm-hmm. So as you're watching it, you're just like, oh my gosh, I'm going on this ride of emotions, like every moment. And having this, they would have a screen in the back that has all the video to those moments that goes along with the score. And so you don't have any audio other than the score that's going on. And it really does come to life. Like, if you ever have a chance to go see it, I would most definitely go see it. It is just, of course you get to the up sequence and everyone is crying.
And then, married life's.
Right. You're just like, right. Oh, but the whole thing, it just like, it really does like endear you to this music, and you're just like, wow, this is my childhood in this hour, you know. So definitely worth it, I would say. And the John Williams one, that one sounds like such a fun thing to do.
I guess my experience with classical music, or at least like a concert type experience, was interested in looking at video game music concerts. It's pretty popular. So I went to a Final Fantasy concert last summer, and also I'm going to another one for the Kingdom Hearts series concert later this June.
Nice.
And
that's cool.
The experience is really mind-blowing, because not only it's about the fandom itself, but the music actually. Some people who have strong memories of them, they really felt touched and moved by it. Music is it's a powerful force, mm-hmm. that can speak to people, that can make people feel something that they've never felt before. And yeah, I'm also excited for the concert in June. So it's pretty great.
So I'll close it up. I've been to the Zelda Symphony of the Goddess, which is an amazing concert. And so much where they're going on like a second tour or second run. And Facebook knows that I like Zelda, so they love to advertise to me and say, hey, go see this. And I see it and I'm like, yes, I want to go. But that was very awesome, because likewise with the Pixar in concert, they play your songs from the various, video games in this case. And they do show the clips behind it. So if you're in Hyrule Field, they'll show Link running through Hyrule Field in Ocarina of Time and whatnot. So
great.
It's a blast. I highly recommend any of these concerts to anyone who loves it. I mean, it's just a great way to experience your fandom in another way. Mm-hmm. And then I will close off with this last thing. It's not necessarily one of these like animation in concert things, but this past weekend I had the incredible honor to go see Leia Salonga.
Oh my gosh.
In concert.
So good.
If you don't know, she is the voice of Mulan, or singing voice of Mulan. She's also the singing voice of Princess Jasmine, and she is a Broadway legend.
Yes, she is.
She is a Disney legend, literally, and she has one of the most beautiful singing voices of all time. And so of course she is a Disney princess, and she loved talking up how she's a Disney princess. She even mentioned, like, straight up, she's like, just I'm gonna lead this off with this: Jasmine is the hottest Disney princess they've ever made. There are no hands down. She's like, that little red outfit, I mean, I can't wear it, but man, like, she was hilarious. It was really fun. So if you have and it was cool because she went and she sang, Reflection from Mulan, and then she also sang A Whole New World from Aladdin, which is a duet, which is hilarious because she picked a random male from the audience.
That's so funny.
So that was really fun. Yeah. And if you have the opportunity to see her, I mean, she is a literal Disney princess. Go see that. So for me, I mean, I love the arts and I love classical music and I just love any of these opportunities that we get to experience our fandom through this means. So I'll include some links to different concerts that are going right now, whether they are video game or Disney or animation related, so you guys can find it. But we want to thank you, Satria, for joining us for this nerdy couch discussion. This was awesome. And also thank you for being a patron and for your patron pick. So before we let you go, do you have any last words?
I don't know. I wish we had more time to talk about Fantasia or even Fantasia 2000 in general, but I guess you guys have already or going to cover that. The underlining theme of Fantasia in general is about order and harmony being brought out of chaos. So from the first Fantasia itself, like, you start from abstract and you end with the idea of hope. And then along the way, you follow the beats of harmony and order and then, like, looking at it from a different perspective and also how that chaos suddenly arises. But then in the end, everything prevails and a good triumph over evil. And relating that to Fantasia 2000, it's also no difference. It's a pretty great movie as a companion to the original Fantasia, and it might not be able to beat the original Fantasia because it stood out as maybe one of the better official animated canons that are sequels like Winnie the Pooh or The Rescuers Down Under. And I think it served as a kind of a laboratory for ideas to come across into music and animation. And so Fantasia, I think, can still somehow come to life and find ways to interpret them in the most breathtaking way possible.
Right, so let's jump into Fantasia 2000. I feel like we've already talked quite a little bit about this. We got a little primer on classical music based on last episode and our nerdy couch discussion. So that was awesome. So before we talk about the basics of the film, let's just watch this trailer, shall we? IMAX trailer. And for those of you, when we watch these trailers, this is our first reaction. So it's kind of like those trailer reactions on YouTube, except for it's here and you can't see the visuals. So it's probably not as great as we imagined it to be. Because we can see it. But okay, let's go. 3, 2, 1.
We all know it's impossible to see music. Yet many composers have tried to take musical sounds and give them a pictorial meaning.
Walt's original idea was that Fantasia would be a
the classic 90s background.
Is the realization of that dream.
Now, the first ever full-length animated motion picture. Exclusively in IMAX theaters.
Trailer guy.
Walt Disney Pictures is proud
to present
his
gig. Seriously.
Fantasia 2000, the IMAX experience.
I mean, there's not much to say about a trailer about a movie that has very little to no dialogue. Because it's all about the music.
Right. Along with a classic favorite. In a motion picture unlike any other.
Oh, that's funny. So they said a classic favorite, and they show Sorcerer's Apprentice, but then they also had a teeny little clip from the Nutcracker Suite.
Oh, yeah.
Which was not included in this. But hey, when you have the footage.
No, that was for the Tin Man, right?
Oh. It was when the fairies...
Oh, the Doritos!
Yes. You're using up your material, Chelsea.
On January 1st, exclusively in IMAX theaters around the world, Walt Disney Pictures proudly presents Fantasia 2000.
epic.
As was the thing to do in the 2000s, to put the number 2000 in front of
it. It was.
So a little bit about this film. All this information is pulled from Box Office Mojo, IMDb, and Wikipedia. All good things. All good things. Studio Walt Disney Animation Studios. So directors. There were quite a few directors. Don Hahn, Eric Goldberg, quite a few others. I don't want to list them all because I don't want to mess up their names, but then I don't give them credit for what they've done. So I'm just gonna blow through this. Don Hahn, Pixote Hunt, Hendel Butoy, Eric Goldberg, James Algar, Francis Glebas, and Paul and Gaten Brizzi. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so totally butchered those names. produced was by Roy Disney and Donald Ernst. Talking about how this movie did, so there were quite a few release dates. The premiere was in December 1999. However, the IMAX release was January 1st, 2000. Like the day it became 2000, like boom, we hit you with Fantasia 2000, just so you know. However, the general release was June 16th, 2000. Runtime 75 minutes, significantly shorter by at least 45 minutes than the original Fantasia. And it feels very short. To me. Well, it doesn't feel very short. It feels adequate, but the budget was around 80 to 85 million, and unfortunately, it only did around 90.9 million. So that is...
They made their budget, though.
Yeah, but that's... You don't want to just, you know, creep $6 million over your budget or, you know, to make it back. But as is... What happens? It happens.
Better than the original.
Well, the original took however many decades to gain back, so maybe Fantasia 2000 will make its budget back in 2045. So it's funny, you know, talking about how, you know, Fantasia, through all the different re-releases, was able to eventually make back its budget. But now there really is very little draw to these, like, releases every 7 years because of the home media market.
Right.
I don't imagine this one ever really having a re-release because, one, it's not one of the super popular ones.
Right.
Two, they've stopped doing the conversion to 3D. You know, they were going to do that for so many films. They did it for Lion King and I believe a few others, but they stopped that very soon.
This one would have been cool in 3D.
This one would have been very cool in 3D, but that, I think they realized, didn't really pay off as much as they wanted it to. So I don't imagine this one can really make up its budget. And it's on Netflix for free. So, I mean, you're not really selling very many units. But
probably getting more spins, though, this way than they would have.
So what were your original thoughts about this movie? Did you ever see this?
I did not see this in IMAX. As you know, if you listened to the last episode, I was not a fan of the original Fantasia. And so I had actually never, until today, I had never seen this movie straight through. I had seen a couple parts here and there. But honestly, like, the main thing that I remember was one time when Morgan and I went to D23, and it was like it was a special year where they were actually covering animation.
Oh, Destination D.
Destination D. Yeah. And Don Hahn came on stage and was like, "Hey, it's Don Hahn." But he comes on and he's like, "So I was trying to figure out different things to show you guys that you wouldn't be able to see anywhere else. Well, I got something. It's a doozy."
Oh, yes.
And he comes up and he's like, "So this was one segment of Fantasia 2000 that we couldn't play because it just would have opened Pandora's box. It was a segment where they had all the princes and princesses and their children." Like, each one of them had a baby. Yes. They're like, "This just can't go." Pandora's box on this one.
Yes. And so they showed us basically the animatic of that. And it was...
No, it was the full thing, I believe.
No, it was just an animatic. It wasn't animated. It was just like the storyboards.
Okay.
But it was epic, guys. I hope one day it leaks on YouTube. We weren't allowed to record, obviously. Very disappointed about that.
Yes,
but
yes.
It was just one day. See it. But so my original thoughts is, I grew up, like we talked about in the last episode, I loved Fantasia, and so I was very, very, very excited for Fantasia 2000. And this was really the heyday of my Disney fanatic, I can't wait for the next Disney movie to come out phase. Mm-hmm. So Did I see this? Absolutely. Was I disappointed? Absolutely. Because, I mean, it was good, but it was never one that I was like, when the VHS came out, that I had to go buy it. I absolutely did not buy it.
Were the DVDs by then?
This was, the beginning of the DVD market, but we did not buy the DVD. We did not buy the VHS. So as a result, I really only have seen this once initially in theaters when it came out. I did not see it in IMAX. And then I've seen pieces through... different things here and there. And so this was probably like the second full time I've ever seen the movie, which, spoilers, was not that impressed, to be honest. I felt that it's very disjointed, and it just doesn't have the same like magical feeling of the first one to me. But we will get all into that.
So interesting.
Although I do remember, if we talked about from time to time, the book Disney War.
Yeah.
And I will include a link in the show notes to that book, but it's amazing. And it basically talks about the history of the Disney studios over the years, particularly the Disney
Eisner
era, and how Roy got ousted and lots of things like that.
Drama.
So it's great.
It's so good.
It should be turned into some sort of documentary. But
it was 60 Disney, hours on Disney Audible. So
exactly.
I'm like,
rotoscopers.com/audible.
There you go.
Hey, that's just one credit for the whole book, so that you're getting you're getting your money's worth of that free Audible credit if you go to rotoscopers.com/audible. But I specifically remember there's quite a big section on devoted to Fantasia 2000 because Eisner just loved the idea of bringing this back.
Like, there's just certain parts of that book that I remember a lot about, but that the Fantasia 2000 part, I don't remember a lot. So Eisner was really into this?
Yes.
I thought it was all Roy's thing.
No. There's a particular little vignette, little story that I'm going to tell a little later when we're talking about one of the segments particularly. But, so let's just jump right into it. So this, I do not like the intro to this movie because it's basically teeing it off by bringing you back to the original Fantasia.
Uh-huh.
And it has this really cheesy montage where these clips are like floating by. And it's almost like if you were to go into iMovie and it has like a template of the reel. And it's like,
I can see
put your movie clip here and then like watch it fly across the screen. I'm like, what are you doing? Because the original Fantasia just was very artistic in even the live action segments. So the fact that they're like, ooh, this is the Fantasia that you know and love, and here's this clip, and here's this clip, and I didn't love it, and I'm like, what are you doing? Just, like, do the cold open with the composer walking up, but no, they don't. And
see, I can tell that this is going to be an interesting episode because I was totally fine with it. Like, that opening for me, I felt like they brought in the old... it's like they told you everything that you needed to know from the old one, but at the same time had new visuals. Like, it was a new theater. So that was cool to just kind of look
at. I did like
the
theater.
The theater was gorgeous.
Very beautiful.
Like, man, I would like to go to
that soundstage, most likely, right?
Right. And
literally a soundstage.
Yes, yes. And so I loved that. And then I just felt like it was succinct. I felt like, cool, we're not wasting any time with this. I like it.
You mean you don't have the 15, well, more like 5 minutes of the orchestra warming up?
Right.
I like that. See, I think that's what gives the original character. But it's okay. We can have different opinions.
That's what's so fun about this episode. This is going to be a fun episode. I can tell already.
So we jump right in to Symphony Number 5, the first movement of Beethoven's Symphony Number 5.
Bum, 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 bum.
Bum, 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 bum. And, they kind of, like with the original Fantasia, they lead off with a more abstract piece because we're bridging the gap from just music without audio visuals to...
I couldn't think of a better one
full
to do
on
that way, though.
Visuals, story, contrived story, I guess, based on the...
Right.
And this one is pretty good. I like the take. It's very reminiscent of the opening Toccata and Fugue of Fantasia, but... Yeah.
I felt like that was probably one everyone's like, why didn't you do Beethoven's Fifth? Like, that's like the everyone would want that one because it's so everyone
let,
knows
let me
that
talk
one.
About this because that's one thing in the original is they did a lot of pieces that weren't necessarily like your top 100 right. favorites of her classical music. They were some were a little more maybe musicians or class or symphony lovers mm-hmm. would particularly love this, but not necessarily a mass audience. And I felt for the most part that the pieces that they selected here were very much appealing to the masses. And this whole like this whole, everything about Fantasia 2000 is what can we do to appeal to the masses? With let's bring in all of our favorite contemporary whoever, you know, Steve Martin, Bette Midler.
That's what I loved about it.
Let's be funny. Let's not take ourselves too seriously. Which
Steve Martin, yeah, I wasn't the biggest fan of him. But like all the other ones, I was like, come on, Angela Lansbury? She's evergreen, man.
I know, but I felt like it's like, how can we get like, it's just totally what they do nowadays advertising the animated film. It's with the voices of.
Right.
It's like, yeah. Okay, we can't do the voices, but like maybe these people. And here's Issa Perlman for the people who actually know who that is. And, yeah. You know, I don't know. To me, I would have liked a little bit more of less familiar tunes. But then again, I mean, as long as the story that they're able to tell and the visuals are good enough, like it doesn't matter. But I felt that was one kind of really unique thing is that it brought you it brought those songs to a newer audience who may not have sought those out on their own or discovered them on their own. So that's cool.
You're such a snob.
I'm an orc dork. It is true.
You're a snob. See, I really liked that. I liked the fact that they were trying to appeal to more of the masses in the way, not necessarily appeal to the masses, but kind of like, these are things that I know that people have complained about before. So mm-hmm. let's do our best to kind of fix it as best we can.
Yeah, but so just leading into Steve Martin, you know, he like starts off with a joke and I'm like, right. I audibly groan. I'm like, oh no. And then he does it again and I'm just like, oh, these jokes don't land. These are horrible. It's they're just the balance and the tone of this film is totally off to me because you have these funny moments with these narrators like, hey, 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 like, hoo, hoo, hoo.
He was the only one that was hey, 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 though.
No, we got Penn and Teller.
Well, yeah, him.
And him? You mean them?
Them. Well, yeah, but he's
the talker,
he's
right?
He's the talker.
But Penn Jillette. And but then some of the pieces, for the most part, they're pretty serious in the stories that they tell. There's no like real goofball. And a lot of them are kind of, you know, way more serious, especially like the ending finale.
Right.
You know, with the Firebird Suite. But it just didn't match up to me. And obviously, yeah, it just didn't match up to me. They're like all over the place. So I struggled with that. So I'm like, what are you trying to be funny to like introduce me to this classical piece of music?
I felt like...
Like, why do I need that? I don't need that. Like, be serious. Just give it to me.
And I liked it. So I do agree about Steve Martin. And I felt like it could have gotten a whole lot better of a feel if they maybe had, like, you know, the Walt Disney type story, like, guy. Like, come on, put his hand on your shoulder. Hey, we're going to talk about this. Like, I feel like that would have gone over a lot better mm-hmm. as a beginning.
Yeah.
But he was really the only one that... And I'm not really the biggest Steve Martin fan. I don't hate him at all, and I'm not a hater, and I think that he's got a lot of really funny stuff, but I just, you know, he's not my like go-to guy of like I want to see him all the time. But he's great. I mean, he does a good job with what he does. It does remind me of his like I'm trying to I taught them all how to do everything.
And I'm just like, what are you talking about?
Right now on Facebook there's like these master classes that go by.
Yeah.
And like there's one of him. And actually he says a lot of really good things on their little like promo of it. But I was still it's just really funny. I'm like, yes, hashtag masterclass.
So our next one is Pines of Rome. And so this is introduced by Itzhak Perlman, who is one of the greatest violinists in the world. And it's like, okay, well, how can we pine to the musical lovers? Well, we got to have like the greats, which I did appreciate that because they brought in great pianists. They brought in great, you know, orchestra, the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. They recorded 6 of the 8 pieces. And then they had very accomplished soloists. Mm-hmm. So I liked that.
Yeah.
I mean, bring in all of your celebrity talent because they're literally talented.
Right.
The best of the best.
Those types of celebrity talents are like great. Yes. Like, please do.
And so, you know, and it's just such a difference in tone when he's very serious in how mm-hmm. he's introducing the next piece. And I'm just like, you can't make up your mind here. And so this already I'm having issues with it, but this one to me,
the part that only the only part that you should have had issues.
So to me, this one is basically can be classified as the one with the whales.
Yes.
Because it's the CGI whales who are floating and eventually fly into the clouds. And I had a this, even though, like, when I see the trailer, I'm like, oh, yeah, the whale one. That's amazing. But to me, when I think of Fantasia 2000, this is not one of the ones that I initially think of at all.
Yeah.
So interesting that happened. But this one, actually, I was not too fond of the CGI whales. And so this is one thing in Fantasia 2000 that they did focus on, is they really wanted this blend of 2D and CGI. And so here the whales are animated by computers. And I felt, again, it was very just off from scene to scene. Sometimes they looked very well rendered. They worked well. And other times it looked like, did you not like have enough money to finish this? Were you running against a deadline? It was very off to me in
how
they
looked.
When
the little whale was like floating up, that I felt like that was mm-hmm. off.
And
off.
The problem with this, it really did date this segment.
Yeah.
In other segments, the CGI is great. However, this one, not so much. I was just sitting there like, wow, this looks very dated. And you compare that to the next one, which is Rhapsody in Blue by George Gershwin. And that just, it's so timeless.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily it is a timeless piece now. It's a contemporary piece in the fact that it's a jazz number, which we didn't have in the Mm-mm. original. However, just the animation is stunning.
Well, yeah.
The 2D, it's based off, Eric Goldberg. He'll talk a lot about this. He was definitely involved with it. It's the Hirschfeld line, which is mm-hmm. this line that kind of gets thicker and thin. They implemented this design based off Hirschfeld for the genie in Aladdin. Mm-hmm. And so obviously they included Hirschfeld in this. So he was kind of involved a little bit as far as the style goes. And it's beautiful. I love that one. Sorry if you had things you wanted to say about Pines of Rome, but just kidding.
Well, you know, as far as Pines of Rome, like the interesting about that song is that I felt like it was super triumphant, but I was thinking like, what did we do to deserve this?
Flying whales. Hello.
But I just felt like the music itself the entire time, not the entire time, but it was either super triumphant or really soft and, you know, just kind of wavy, wavy. But it's like, and then it goes straight back up to triumphant, which it was just kind of like, I don't know what I didn't feel like I earned the mm-hmm, triumphant mm-hmm. of entrance of this. But Rhapsody in Blue, man, that one, I just from the start, I was just like, I like this mm-hmm. one. I like the jazz. I like just having the different flavor in there as opposed to, because jazz is such a medium that people don't really give enough appreciation to, because people who know jazz are like, can just do anything. They really can. They're their own animal. I just appreciate them so much. And then another thing that I really liked is, as talking about Eric Goldberg, is the name of the hotel is actually called the Goldberg. So that's what I was.
Ooh.
I was like, hey, it's Eric.
Hey, I'm going to name a hotel after myself because why not? This is my segment. Of course.
This is mine. I would.
So we talked about the design. I loved the Hirschfeld line. Mm-hmm. I loved the colors. It was very mm-hmm. saturated and almost monochromatic really cool. in a way. The storyline was great. And the backgrounds, it very much reminded me of the Xerox era.
Yeah.
And so just all of that right away, it just was instantly classic. One little moment that stood out was the girl pouring coffee in the diner.
I loved her.
Loved her look.
Her eyelashes?
Yes.
Were so cool.
I need to be her for Halloween, or somebody
does.
How do
you find eyelashes like that?
I don't know, but let's make it happen.
Let's make that happen.
So we did actually interview Eric Goldberg, and I looked to see if we had talked about this particular sequence in that interview. We did not, which is okay. However, he has talked about this on quite a few other podcasts, so I'll mm-hmm. include show notes there. The animation the original, the animation podcast.
Yes.
And also the Bancroft Brothers podcast. He's talked about this. So go check it out.
Those are good, good resources to find more stuff. As I was going through, it reminded me a lot of Bug's Life. There's moments where I was like, was this even in Bug's Life? But for whatever reason, this, like, all I could think was Bug's Life from this one. But no, it wasn't.
No Bug's Life, but that's okay.
It's okay. It still ties everybody together. And, you know, at the end, the storyline, as I mentioned, is really great because you just see everyone gets what they want in the end and everything. It's a happy ending all around.
Yes.
It's a great one. And then we lead into Bette Midler. And that one actually made me laugh.
Okay, can we just talk about Bette Midler's pose?
Yes.
Like, what is she doing? She has the shawl thing, like, draped on her elbows. And then, like, the hand on the hip. I'm like, wow, Bette, we are very natural, no?
But she was just like, hi, guys.
Hey. Oh, Bette. Yeah, so, again, I'm like, are we all going to be totally like? She wasn't supposed to be funny, I don't think.
No, and she wasn't. But she was supposed to be Bette Midler.
Exactly. Yeah, so.
Apparently that's Bette Midler.
She introduces us to Piano Concerto No. 2, Allegro Opus 102 by Dmitri Shostakovich.
Ooh.
Very nice. And I loved this one.
Really?
Yes. I loved the CGI of this. And this actually is the first time in a Disney animated film where the main characters are CGI.
Yeah, that's true.
So initially, you know, back in the day, the 90s, 80s.
The 90s.
They either use background characters or tertiary characters or secondary characters. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in the one that always gets brought up is called the clock in The Great Mouse Detective. Now, that itself is not CGI. They use CGI and then they traced over it. Mm-hmm. So it's like a little rotoscoping CGI. Or in The Lion King with the Stampede, those were CGI elements. They weren't your main character, but they were...
Well, Aladdin, too, with the Cave of Wonders.
The Cave of Wonders.
And the carpet.
Yeah. So very cool things there. But this was actually the very first one that was a CGI character. So that is your animation trivia for you. And I love the characters because, again, they went with the Toy Story route where they went with inorganic characters.
Right.
Like dolls and little tin soldier, where it's okay if you don't get that 100% right, because we... If they tried it with a person, immediately we'd be like, "Woo, something's off." Mm-hmm. Uncanny Valley. Mm-hmm. And we saw that even with the whales. The whales, they're this organic, you know, being, and there's just something off about them. They haven't quite figured that out yet. They haven't gotten that sophisticated. And so that's why Toy Story works so well, is because, hey, like, we can make a surface shiny. We can do that. Right? And that's what they did with this character. Her face was sort of like a porcelain face,
right,
much like Bo Peep. And I just loved it. I loved the way she looked. I loved the way they moved. And again, like we talked about, this was actually a piece where they had a story initially.
Yeah.
And they were waiting for the perfect piece to put it to. And I thought it worked very well.
I thought the story was really cute. I really liked that. The song I thought worked great with it. I wasn't a fan of the animation.
See? Man, opposites us.
I know. I really wasn't. And I know that they were trying to go with... what is the Pixar short? The tin toy. The tin toy. And I think that one also, I just don't really like. So this one had the same vibe for me. So I didn't warm up to this one. But everything else about it, aside from the animated part, was good.
Nice. Then we are led into James Earl Jones.
His was the best one. Okay. So he started out all James Earl Jones-ish. And I mean, what's not to like about Mufasa? Come on now.
Yeah. But it's like, what other giant big name celebrities can we bring in?
Yeah. And then at the very end, I think his joke, he delivered the best. Because he was like, and we have this. And then the animator hands him the little thing. He's like, what happens when we give yo-yo to flamingos? Who writes this stuff?
And I didn't like that. I liked it. What are you trying to do?
I thought he delivered the line
great. And that was Eric Goldberg. He had his little cameo right there. Yeah, so Carnival of the Animals, this to me was felt very much inspired by the Dance of the Hours, which is the hippos and the alligators and elephants. And it felt that, oh, okay, we had these like dancing creatures and it went over so well in the first one. What's something similar that we could go through? I don't know if that was their thought process, but to me it felt like, okay, we need another dancing something. And it was good. And I mean, this is a very iconic song. And it's pretty short. And that's one thing.
Super short.
We, with this, they really like, okay, the attention span of people in the 40s, like this was their only form of entertainment. So of course they loved it. However, when we are the 90s and we have all sorts of things, I mean, this is 20 years before, you know, nowadays where it's just like constant attention and, and no one can keep you focused for 15 seconds, let alone 3 minute song. So yeah, the, much shorter. But I liked it. I did enjoy the little story. I thought it was fun and quirky and
cute.
And cute, exactly. But and the colors were great. So
yeah,
love those colors. So that leads us then into Penn Jillette and Teller.
The tall guy and the short guy. We never change.
We never change. Yep.
And it works out. I mean, I never realized that it was their same dynamic with the Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Yeah, totally.
I was like the short guy and the tall guy. Is it just me, or does Penn Jillette really remind you of the OxiClean guy? Like, you know, remember how he was always just like, oh my gosh, this is so exciting. Like, it was just, I just felt like it was totally that guy. And
well,
I was like, oh,
when your co-host doesn't actually talk, you really have to overemphasize to make up for it. But that's their shtick. Hear Teller talk.
It's fine. Whatever. It was just funny.
So they introduce us into the Sorcerer's Apprentice, which is not a reimagining of it. Like at that point, this is so classic that, you know, you got to keep it, I guess. But why? To me, I'm sitting here and I'm like, why? And it's also, you know, it's the old, the animation was different. So you have the black bars on the screen, which I'm like, okay, you know, and it definitely makes it feel out of place, that alone. And then they had to restore the animation to that. And they sent it to a big restoring house specifically for that scene. But I'm sitting here and I'm just like, maybe it's because I just watched the movie last week and I'm like, I already saw this. Thank you very much. But like, it really doesn't feel necessary to me. It feels that they're sort of just like tapping into what they know already works. But that's kind of what they did with the beginning. Like, they already tied us in and brought the correlation with the old Fantasia with the new. Why just have this old segment?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. I was like, was this needed? I don't know. I realize, okay, yes, tie it back to the original. Yes, keep Mickey current.
It's a classic.
It's a classic. I can see all of those things. But, and also I can see the fact that it was so long ago. Because, you know, you look at like almost everything.
Bring it to a new audience.
Everything that Disney ever really did was recycle their old material. Yeah, yeah. So I understand that. It's like it's a tradition by now. Just recycle the old stuff. But like, yeah, that was the one thing that I was like, I don't know if this was really needed. I think it could have been really cool if they would have done something else with the same Sorcerer Apprentice type vibe.
Yeah, totally.
Just different.
I would have loved to see a reimagining of the Sorcerer's Apprentice. Well, the Sorcerer's Apprentice, no, because it's based on a poem. But maybe if they would have taken a different piece and say, okay, ignore everything they did in Fantasia. If you were to write a story or, you know, animate something, like, what do you see? That would have been really cool to me because, I mean, you
just
could
have reimagining of something
pastoral sweet. And you think Pegasi and, you know, cherubs, centaurs, and have it be something completely different would be really, really neat to me. Could've but they cool. did not do that. Going along with bringing Sorcerer's Apprentice back, they actually were going to bring back two others, the Dance of the Hours the Nutcracker Suite. And those eventually got cut. So one thing we didn't actually talk about at the beginning is that this was something in development for a very long time. And we talked in last episode how this was something that Disney wanted to just reimagine all the time. You know, like he would re-show this and like maybe these three things would be taken out and these three new ones would be in. And the next time, okay, these would be taken out and these would be put in. It was like constantly evolving and growing. And so I guess I could see how this relates to that initial concept of like a little of the old, a little of the new. You don't know what you're going to get. But so in the 80s, you know, there were the talks about doing this and bringing it back. Didn't ever actually come to be. And Eisner, as we said, was really the one who like was all gung ho. And it was one of the main things that triggered this was the 1991 release, VHS release of Fantasia. Mm-hmm. It had almost 10 million pre-orders and units, which like for people who didn't want to see Fantasia in the theaters, like people really wanted to see it on VHS. That being said, at this point, not the entire Disney canon hadn't been released on mm-hmm. VHS yet. So it was one of the few early ones. So there's like, I think an initial like jump on excitement, and it kind of wanes each time. It was like to me, the Disney Legacy Collection, mm-hmm. which is the soundtracks where they added like bonus discs and bonus features like that. The first one, like everyone was all excited about. And I'm sure the sales were incredible. And then each subsequent release, it was like, it's like, I'm not as excited.
Well, because you always put your biggest ones out first, too, for that one.
Yeah.
But for Fantasia, I think also I definitely had the I have to buy all of these.
Yes. I got to complete the set.
I got to have the complete set here. And I don't even care if I've never even seen Make My Music. I've got to have it. You know?
Yeah.
Which I still don't have.
So talking about Eisner, and he was really the force behind this. He also, you know, obviously being the head of the studio and the company, he got to push what he wanted. And so he really, and this was one thing I learned from Disney Wars, he really wanted pomp and circumstance. He went to a graduation, and this is the classic graduation song that they play.
That's right.
And he heard the music and said, oh, this is amazing. We have to have pomp and circumstance in this. And everyone at the studio and on the team was like horrified because they're like, what? Like that is like of all the popular songs, like that's the most like used and cliche.
Well, it's the stigmatized.
Yes. And they just said, no, we don't want this. And
not
he said
stigmatized, but it's like, it's, this is, that is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. It's
they, I mean, in the intro, they're like, oh, actually they didn't just use it for this. They used it for any type of occasion.
Yeah.
Spin hard.
Oh
man.
Yes.
Keep spinning.
So he didn't care and he pushed it anyway. And I think a lot of people, I can't remember if they were necessarily disappointed with it. I actually think that is one of the better segments, surprisingly, because I like the story. Before we talk about that, this had a Mickey intro.
Yeah.
So
I kept thinking that every time I heard it, because I knew did they redo the voice because in the original Fantasia,
there was no voice.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, yeah.
He goes, oh, thank you very much. You did a great job. So he's there. I'm pretty sure that was Walt that mm-hmm. was doing that one. So I was thinking, did they redo the voice for this one
No. This was a different Mickey.
Right. I mean, they used Wayne Allwine for the new segment. But yes. I didn't know if he went back and re-recorded those lines to make sure that they sounded right.
Oh.
So I think they probably did, because otherwise it would just be really weird to have like, no, those are two completely different voices. I mean, well, he does a fantastic job at Mickey, but yeah. Anyway, I just always kept thinking of, oh, Wayne, and his wife was Minnie. Aw.
So cute. So speaking of Minnie, that kind of leads me into this pomp and circumstance thing. So this is the story of the
Noah and the
Noah's Ark and the animals 2x2. But they do it with another famous Disney character, which is Donald.
Yeah.
And so Donald is our hero this time, and Daisy. And so as I saw Daisy, I love Daisy.
She's never in anything.
She's in like the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse now. But as far as like the main trio, you usually see Donald, Goofy, Mickey, and Minnie.
Uh-huh.
She's lesser. If lesser is, prevalent,
yeah,
right?
If there is a female, it's going to be Minnie versus Daisy.
But I love Daisy. She is my favorite character. As soon as I saw her, I was just like, oh, you're my favorite. I love you so much. I love you so much more than Minnie. So, yes, that's me. But I love the segment. I thought that the story was very cute.
Yeah.
I liked how, you know, they lost each other and they were super sad about it. They kept missing each other at the very end. You know, they reach for the locket. And see each other. It's cute. True love.
I'm thinking, man. I mean, it was the Ark, so obviously it's going to be a big boat. But if, like, that's a really big boat, if they really, they're on there for 40 days and 40 nights and they can't find each other. So.
Exactly, right? So our very last segment is Angela Lansbury.
Aww.
You know, as much as I've had issues with these narrators, like, you can't go wrong with her. She looks so great. And she introduces very classic piece, the Fire Bird Suite, which is the 1919 version by Igor Stravinsky, which you might recall that name, Igor Stravinsky. He is Rite of Spring was the one that we were able to see in the original
they
film.
They really ticked him off with that one.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, we ticked you off the first time. Hey, let's do it again.
I love yeah,
I don't think
song,
he was alive though. At this point in time.
Probably not, but, no. But I just, I really liked this song to begin with. Like going into it, I was like, oh yeah, this is really cool.
So what I love about this song is, so being an orc dork, I've played a lots of songs over the years. And the Firebird Suite is something that we did play my senior year in high school. Nice. And so we didn't play the entire Firebird Suite. We only played one of the movements. And so it's just like, to me, anytime Jerry gets so annoyed because we'll be driving and we'll be listening to the classical station. And I'm like, oh, I played this in orchestra. Oh, I played this in orchestra. Oh, I played this in orchestra. He's like, you played everything in orchestra. I'm like, no, but we did play this one in orchestra.
We did play this one.
So this... So, guys, I played this in orchestra.
I kept thinking, Bambi, the Firebird is in the forest.
So true.
That's what it was. It was like, this oh, man, it's Firebird.
When I think of Fantasia 2000, I think of this particular segment because of this, like, nymph fairy, the green. I remember at the Disney store... Back when they had those.
They still have them.
They still have them. There's just not as many. It wasn't the 90s.
Not as cool.
Retail's failing hard now. But they had lithographs that you could purchase. And this was a very large lithograph.
Oh, that's right.
And I remember it was probably like $2,000. And I just remember every time I went in there just thinking. And it was the classic pose of her where she's the entire frame. It's her face. And there's butterflies like in her hair. That's like when you think of this movie. I think it's actually what we picked for the show notes or for the album art and thumbnail for this episode. But that's what, when you think of this particular thing, you see that a lot.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at that and just thinking, oh my gosh, I would love to own this and put this over my bed. True story. I did not. I couldn't convince the fam, but I'm going to go on eBay. I'm going to go see if I find one on eBay, I'll link it in the show notes. So please. You can buy it and put it over your bed.
Live vicariously through you.
But this is a very classic song and very epic. I love the Firebird and just it's funny with these Stravinsky songs. It's like, okay, lots of death, lots of things being destroyed and dying.
Right, right.
And at the end of the Rite of Spring, we don't see the regrowth of the new coming up. And I think initially I don't know if we mentioned this, but there was supposed to be a segment of like man. Oh yeah. We talked about this man coming after the dinosaurs.
Right,
and
there
was that like ending, you know, people didn't like that. So they didn't, but this we do see at the very end that there's like spring again.
Yes. Yes. And I liked this triumphant ending. You know, I felt like this triumph was deserved as opposed to the beginning where it's like, I'm starting out triumphant. Like, what is this?
Yeah.
But this one, I felt like you go through the full process and you feel it. It feels good. And I feel good. I like it. So this one was probably my favorite section of the film. I felt like the ending was super quick. After that, so they finish off with the Firebird, they come back, hey, thanks for joining us, or whatever. And then it's like, it has this kind of like mixture of the different songs, and I really liked the songs that they used for that one. And then I half expected Tinkerbell to come up and like, in color.
Yeah.
And then they have a post-credit scene as well, where Steve Martin, like, you don't see him, you just hear him. It's like, get the camera back on me, guys. Can someone get me a ride home? Which was, I was like, yeah, I didn't need you at all. But hey, whatever. It's cool.
Okay, so let's rate it.
Okay.
What would you rate it?
I want to hear yours first.
So in case you can't tell, I don't necessarily love this movie as much as I'm imagining you do. And I definitely do not love this movie as much as the original. I think the original is just it has Walt's touch.
Yeah.
It's very apparent that Walt was involved in the original Fantasia. This one, it's very disjointed. Tonality or tone-wise, it's just all over the place. Is it funny? Is it serious? What am I supposed to take out of this? Like, why the jokes? I just didn't get it. I understand that they're sort of pandering to this modern audience. The songs, And the sequences really, for the most part, did not stand out to me. When I think of like the iconic moments of this, I do think of Pomp and Circumstance, surprisingly, even though no one else really wanted that other than Eisner, just because I think the Donald sequence is very memorable and it's the most cohesive story, I think. Not cohesive, but it definitely is very much out there.
Most memorable, I think.
One of the most memorable stories.
Most memorable new story.
And then the piano sonata with the tin soldier.
Yeah.
I loved that. And I loved the animation. And then let's wrap it up with the Firebird suite. Very, very epic and iconic. So as far as like a movie that I would like, you know, if I'm going to rate this, I have to give it like 2.5 stars.
What?
Because it's just, it doesn't do it for me.
Really?
The other one, I mean, yes, it's long, but I love that it's long. I feel that every segment is really worth it and you earn it. And you go on this journey. While this, it's short, it's 45 minutes shorter than the other one. Right. And it's just like, okay, one of those sequences is reused, which I didn't appreciate. And I felt like they really did try. Oh, Rhapsody in Blue is another one that was very iconic and that I loved. And I like the individual pieces, but it's like a whole collective movie. I just don't love it. And it's a combination of those horrible narrator bits, who wrote this sort of thing. And just, mostly that is kind of, that alone is the reason I gave it 2.0. No. But just as a whole, like, I don't want to go back to this one.
Okay.
So there you go.
All right. So things that I liked about this was having the different live action announcers. Are they dated? Well, Steve Martin, yes, I believe. But I feel like, as I said, James Earl Jones, Bette Midler, Angela Lansbury, I feel like they're all evergreen. I like them, and I liked how it broke it up a little bit. And I liked that it wasn't as long, obviously. I'm glad that they pandered to the wider audience, aka me. And so I'm good with that. All the songs, I felt like they were kept at like a digestible length. So I felt like I wasn't
bored.
I wasn't bored. Yeah, I never got bored throughout it. And it was showing this kind of, honestly, if I had a kid and I were showing them a Fantasia, I would do this one before I did the original. Mm. Because I feel like this one would be better for like ramping you in, I think. Mm-hmm. And so, for those reasons, and the fact that I felt like it was good. I liked it. So I give it 4 stars out of 5.
Wow.
Yeah.
We are quite opposite from last episode.
Right. That's what I think is really funny. And so...
the yin and yang.
Yes. Well, it would be really boring if it's like, yes, we're all snobs.
We love it.
Yeah. This time you can be the snob and I have to be. Like, I wanted to say all good things about the last one, but it just wasn't my thing.
But that was for me.
Yeah, that was for you to be. Yeah. And this one was all, like, it was much better for me. So, yay. I'm glad that you guys, I want to know, as far as, like, listeners, if you guys liked, if you were more on my side, if you're more on Morgan's side.
Weigh in. That'll be the daily debate.
Yes, that's the daily debate right there. So head on over to rotoscopers.com/147 to be able to let us know whose side you're on. This is the battle.
Hashtag Team Morgan.
Hashtag Team Chelsea.
All right, we're going to jump into our voicemail, so off we go.
Good day to you, Rotoscopers. This is Danny once again. I'm here to talk about what I think of Fantasia 2000. On the whole, I'd say that this is a pretty good sequel, but it's certainly not as good as the original, since the original took itself very seriously as like a new art form, whereas this film doesn't do so as much. That said, some of the segments are absolutely fantastic. My favorite parts of the film include the Pines of Rome segment with the flying whales, the Al Hirschfeld tribute done to Rhapsody in Blue, and of course the Firebird suite with that beautifully animated nature goddess. Plus, seeing the Sorcerer's Apprentice again is always great. The other segments to me range from decent to pretty stupid. And I don't think we need all those celebrity cameos in between. So yeah, those are my thoughts, and hopefully if there's a Fantasia 3000, it'll be more like the original.
Hey, Rotoscopers, Jonathan North here. I just wanted to call in to talk about Fantasia 2000, because the first one is one of my favorite movies ever. And I actually think that Fantasia 2000 is beautiful as the first one. There's so much gorgeous imagery in it. The room with the whales and the Firebird Suite are my favorites. I think those two at least are on par with the first movie. But I will say, as much as I love it, it does have a few problems, mainly the host. And if it were up to me, I would just George Lucas the whole thing and re-release a host-free version, an updated version, maybe add in a couple new segments, because they made a couple more segments. They were going to make a third Fantasia, which never got made, but there's some segments floating around. I say get rid of the host. Despite its problems, I still think the positives outweigh the negatives. And that's about all I got to say. Thanks for doing this. I think it's a great choice for a podcast.
Hi there, my name is Amy, and I'm a relatively new listener. I only started listening back in December, but I've been going through your old episodes, and I just listened to your episode on Frozen. Listening to your episode on Frozen, it made me kind of wonder what you thought about the film today. All of you guys really loved the film, gave it all 4.5 or 4 stars, and I'm wondering if those ratings have changed for you at all since time has passed, and you've probably seen it a bunch of times. I know for me, I would probably rate the film closer to a 3.5 now. I feel like its rewatchability level is lower than a lot of the other recent movies. That may also be because I babysit kids. I was also wondering what you thought about the Frozen soundtrack compared to the Moana soundtrack. On the episode, you discussed how you wish there was that kind of tribal cultural beat throughout the film in the music, and how that was something that you were missing. That's something I definitely missed from Frozen as well. And I feel that that was really fulfilled very well in Moana. So, yeah, I love the show, and I'm excited to keep listening. Thanks. Bye.
So this is actually a great question, because Frozen, we were on the Frozen hype train.
Oh my gosh.
For sure.
We were the Frozen hype train.
Yeah, exactly. I love when people say, I found you because of your Frozen stuff.
I know, like, I do.
So I do think that my feelings of Frozen has come down a bit, especially just because I felt like, because there was so much hype, there was this huge high that we just eventually fell from. You can only ride the Frozen wave for so long.
Yeah.
You can only watch it so many times. Aladdin, not the case. I can watch that as many times as I want.
There you go.
I think we gave it pretty high, like 4.5 stars before, and hailed it as this masterpiece. I think looking back, it doesn't drop too much for me.
It doesn't drop.
It's either I still think a 4.5 for me.
Yeah.
It has a lot of fantastic elements that really make a wonderful film. However, all of those like gushings that I have upon initial viewing, maybe not so much, but that's probably just Frozen fatigue.
Yeah.
I actually haven't watched Frozen in a few years, so it'd be interesting to go back. Maybe that should be like a fun patron.
Was the last time we did.
Oh, but yeah. A patron pick, like a patron exclusive is we'll go. Ooh, if you're interested, we could. For some of the patron fun things is go back and rewatch a movie from our initial, you know, like Beauty and the Beast. I'd love to go back and Frozen, and we can release those only to the patrons. So again, in the comments, let us know if that's something you'd be interested in. We could make it one of the, maybe like the $10 level or $5 level. I don't know.
Yeah. I think for us, because we were the Frozen train, it was just the rest of the world got like jumped on and was at their height in January. It came out in November, like end of November, and the rest of the world kind of jumped on that train in January. But by that point in time, we had already talked about this movie for over a year. And so I think because of that, I fell off the, not, I don't want to say I fell off the train, but I was just like, I had no more chug left.
I kind of ran out of chug.
I wanted. So like, it was just like, okay. But I still think it's good. I don't think I really changed my score for it. The replay value is lower only because of that though. And I don't think that it's necessarily, I don't know. She says that the replay value is lower for her, but she also says that she watches kids.
Yeah.
And if a kid watches it every single day, yeah, it's going to lose.
It's the old, if you watch Lion King one more time, I'm going to throw it away.
Exactly.
And so I stopped watching Lion King for a few years. You can't throw it away.
Exactly. So I don't think that we're even like in a great place to say that this is like, it loses replay value just because
we've been disconnected from it for a while, but yeah, I mean, hey, I'm game to go back.
I'm game to go back too. As far as the Moana soundtrack versus the Frozen soundtrack, I think there's two totally different animals. I mean, two totally different writing teams put them together. Yes, I would have liked there to have been more of the tribal stuff in Frozen, just kind of like push that along. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Moana, they stayed pretty well consistent through the whole thing. Yeah. So I think that was, I mean, props to Moana for doing that. But at the same time, I'm not going to take anything away from Frozen because we all listen to Let It Go for a bazillion times. So it's not like they did anything wrong.
Well, thanks everyone for joining us for this episode of the Animation Addicts podcast. I had a blast talking about Fantasia 2000 or Fantasia Continued. This was one of the original names, or Fantasia 1999. Oh crap, it's not coming out in 1999. We got to change it to 2000.
2000 just has a better ring.
It does. Fantasia 1999.
But not as good as ring as 2001.
Ooh, that was the sequel to the sequel.
That was a thing back then. It was not the 2000, it was the 2001.
Oh yeah. Oh, Nimbus 2000. Nimbus 2001. Thanks for joining us. Again, join us in the show notes, rotoscopers.com/147. Are you Team Chelsea or Team Morgan?
Team Chelsea.
How do you feel about this? Also, give us your review on Fantasia 2000 in the comments. We are excited to hear them, so we will be there or be square. You can also find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all the good places. We're trying to do a little bit more on Instagram. We're doing a lot of contests with things.
Which is fun.
Yeah. So go subscribe to us on our subscribe. Go follow us on Instagram so you can enter our contest. We give away lots of DVDs and things. A lot of times we'll get an extra book or so from a publisher, so we'll give it away. So we want to definitely, our new channel to give things away is going to be Instagram. So follow us there, and we're going to try to do, you know, more fun content, Instagram stories, things like that. So that's my little plug.
Woohoo!
And then again, thanks to Satria for being a patron and joining us for this patron Nerdy Couch discussion.
It was a great one.
Very fun. And if you want to, hey, hear your voice on the podcast, you can find out all about that at rotoscopers.com/Patreon. And that's all I have.
That's all I have too.
Until the next, you know, Fantasia iteration in 2030.
Fantasia 2001.
Yes. Plus 20.
Plus 20.
What's the new version? Fantasia 3000.
There you go. In 1,000 years, we will be back.
We'll be back with our cremated, not with our floating heads. Yes. Till next time.
Fan art that. Until next time.
Don't blame me. I voted for Morgan. Until next time. We are the Rotoscopers.
Rotoscopers.
as opposed to like the Nimbus 2000, which we did get a fan art. Did you get that? I got a fan art of last episode because we did.
No.
Yeah, no, it was grand. So at the beginning of episode last time, we were talking about how it, like, you're a wizard, Mickey. Oh, yeah. And so one of the fans sent us on Instagram a fan art that they did of that moment. It's pretty fantastic. We'll go ahead and post that in the show notes. But it's, yeah, it's grand.
Nice. That's hilarious.
It is.
Incomplete information.
I'm sorry. Well, I have those linked in there.
Oh, well, I'm already halfway there.
It's like cost. It's like the pig. It's like God, we're already in the 20s. I've got to go all the way around.
I've already waited 20 minutes in this grocery store line. I don't care if that one's opened up. Okay.